Folks, we are with Kurt Ryle from the Gripweeds and various other bands. This is a guy who is 150% into music. He's a master producer, or one of the owners of House of Vibes, and he's also in a number of bands, the Gripweeds for one. And we're going to talk with him about really everything. Recently, they put out the double album, Strange Change Machine, with some really cracking tunes on it. And Kurt, a big welcome to you, and thank you for joining us. And I guess
glad to be here. By phone.
Yeah, by phone. Kurt's in New Jersey. I'm in Virginia. This is how we do these interviews.
Tech.
We're super tech. Let's just jump right into Strange Change Machine. It's a double album. And how did you know that when the Gripweeds, or I know it's not just you personally, but it's a band effort. How did you all know that this needs to be a double album? Is it because of the length of time between the two releases, or you all just had a lot of different music that you felt fit perfectly for Strange Change Machine?
Well, it was more a case of, you know, best laid plans always get changed. And the original plan was to have an album out shortly after the previous release, which was Giant on the Beach. And we had started to write songs and started to record that about a year after that album came out, which would be about 2006 or so. And without any thought of what this is going to be or anything, it was just, we got a few songs, let's go into the studio and record them. And we started to do that. And around that time, we ran out completely of copies of our first album, House of Vibes. And there, we just thought, you know, we can repress this, or we could make it better than it was. It was our first effort. We were really finding our way in the studio, and we just felt it needed a facelift, really. So these things take time, and we really got into it with that album. We had to transfer the original analog tapes to digital, and some of them, it was about 12 years had passed, and something like that. And some of the tapes had to be baked to be playable. The tapes can lose their the chemically, they start to separate, and they have to be baked. They have to be heated to be played. Otherwise, they gum up the machine. Then we started going into like this exhaustive search into the vaults of our tape vaults here, of like not really tape vaults, more like a closet. But you know, we found all our demos and our live stuff, and we thought, well, let's make this a real special record, you know,
right,
which we did. So that became House of Vibes Revisited, and I think that came out in 2007. So we got totally derailed off this new album. We put it to the side. And then as we were starting to think about, okay, let's get back to our new album, we got a call from Little Steven Van Zandt and Wicked Cool Records. And they said, we want to put out a compilation of your first few albums, and, you know, do you have anything that we can add to it? And we thought, yeah, we could, you know, we have some things we could do. And then they said, we want you to record some acoustic tracks. And so we started getting into picking songs for a compilation, which eventually turned out to be Infinite Soul, the best of the Gripweeds. And this
right.
that whole project was a real, it felt good. It was real nice to, it was something that none of us had ever thought we'd get the opportunity to have, especially at the request of someone, you know, as famous as Steven Van Zandt. You know, to be asked to do a compilation was beyond our thoughts, that we'd even have enough material to do that. And
right.
So here we were, faced with the dilemma of what do we put on it, you know. And ultimately, Steven had those choices, but we got involved with that, and you know, writing, we didn't have to write anything, but we had to record some things. We went back to our first single and recut it, which was She Brings the Rain. And so that wound up being on the album. So we totally got sidelined. And then I started getting into the Smithereens projects, and they were that was a real eye-opener for me, because it sort of took me to another level of, or it actually wound up taking the whole band to another level, in terms of our, the way we recorded, how we approached the recording. It was a real fundamental change or education, really. It was like, it's like recording 101, you know, learning
yeah.
from the masters who had gotten top 10 records, and, you know, been in the studio with all these people that they were influenced by, and they came to me, and I just soaked it all up, you know, and working closely with them, and with Pat DiNizio in particular as the songwriter, and just learning his mind, you know, how he approached things. You know, I learned so much from that. And what did I do? I went right back to the band and, you know, said, we've got to tighten up our material. We've got to approach things from a less self-indulgent point of view, and, you know, just think one step out of the box of, you know, what's going to happen when a listener puts this on their, you know, in their CD player, and what are they going to think immediately, and how do you hook them in and not expect them, you know, to have the patience, you know, to work through something, and just all those kind of thoughts, you know. So I was working with that, with Pat DiNizio closely and the Smithereens, and then we finally got back to what became Strange Change Machine. And in that time period, which was, by now it was about 2 years or so, we had written a bunch more songs, and then it just became either we could just record, you know, enough for a single album, or we could go the distance and do more so that we would have the pick of the best material for a double album. And then we decided to just go with a double album because in this age of free downloads and things like that, we saw a lot of ways where we could market it, you know, give away a portion of it and, you know, get people interested in the record. So that's what happened with Strange Change Machine. That's a very long story, but hopefully it's a good one.
We're talking with Kurt Ryle from the Gripweeds, and you know, we heard you talking about the Smithereens projects. There was a Greatest Hits. There were a few Beatles revisited, as well as a Who tribute. That I don't know if you worked on all of those, but that's
I did.
That's a lot. Incredible work. And I remember when you and I had spoken a couple of years ago. I remember just like being really excited about how you had put together all the songs for the Smithereens' Greatest Hits. I thought, you know, I mean, I'm
a... You mean the live record?
The live record, yes. I thought you did a great job with that. I thought it sounded great. Obviously, the band has to sound good, but, like, the recording also has to be good as well. I mean, I just thought everything just sounds great in there, and I'm a big Smithereens
fan.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was a pressure cooker from the standpoint of the recording. I remember when we first went down to do it, I had this console. I was all set up at my station, and we put it all together in the afternoon at the Court Tavern in New Brunswick. And just trying to get ready to go, and I had some rented pieces of gear down there. Because you know what was happening? We were recording simultaneously. We were doing these live shows at night with the Smithereens, and then they would come in during the day and work on the second Beatles album, which was Besides the Beatles.
Right.
That's how we did that. So I was taking my computer and going back and forth between the studio in New Brunswick, the Court, and spending the afternoon working on Beatles covers, and then going into the Court at night and doing the live show. And the first night, I had this rented piece of gear that didn't work, and it was literally minutes before the show started, and I'm online to California with tech support from this company going, how does this thing work? What can I do? And they talked me through it, and it was literally like 5 minutes before they went on that the lights went on, the whole thing worked. I was like, oh my God, that was total luck, you know? So that was day one of the Smithereens live at the Court Tavern. I don't know if the band knows that, but that's what I went through.
It's quite possible they're going to know now. And I have to tell you, I've also interviewed Richard X. Heyman. And,
oh, yeah, I don't know. Good friend of mine.
Yeah, I know you play percussion quite a bit for him, but I have to ask, or it's in his book, he told me a story about how he was worried that his drummer had not shown up yet. And then I think in the book, or it has to be in the book, it was like for some show in the city, and I don't know if it was a contest where he was performing for, a prize of some sort, but he's like, my drummer's not here. He's like, he started showing another drummer, you know, what he needed to, you know, to kind of make the songs work. And then he described you as this really good-looking guy, just kind of strolled right in and just made an entrance. And
I don't think I read that.
Oh, it's classic reading. I mean, just the way he writes is classic. It's, and having spoken with him a few times, it reads the way he speaks. And
well, Richard's a character.
Yes.
And he's a good character. He's a good friend and a really, really talented guy. But, you know, he's a character. And, I've worked with him a long time. And we're still working together. I'm producing the band that he's in now, the Doughboys.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, I'm definitely familiar with them.
But this contest that he's talking about is probably, you know, what he didn't write in his book was I was probably spending, you know, an extra 45 minutes fighting New York City traffic to get to the show and find a parking
space. I think that was in there also.
You know, those kinds of things that, you know, yeah, I made a nice, cool, calm, collected intro, but, you know, I had to run to the gig.
Well, I wanted to go back to Strange Change Machine. So we have this double album release. You talked about making some free songs available. I bought the CD, and also when you signed up for the mailing list, you got 8 free songs, like right off the bat. I think you sign up for your mail list, and boom, here's 8 songs. And my opinion was, I thought that was a great, I don't want to say marketing, but it was like, if you don't like these songs, you're not going to like our record, and you're not going to buy it. But if you like these songs, you are going to buy our record. How have you found the recognition you've gotten for this record? How has it been? And
it's been great. Yeah, what's your second part of your question?
Second part was like, how many times have you been able to play I don't want to say the whole record live, but since it's been released, how many times have you played live?
We've played live many, many times. We've done many shows since the album has come out. I can't even count them. I mean, it's probably not more than like 20 or so, but we've done many shows, and we started playing. Are you talking about, you know, playing the songs live? So we started playing the songs live before the album came out.
what is it? Do you need to play the songs live so that you can get an idea on stage and from a recording perspective? Is this going to work? Is this not going to work? Am I feeling it? Am I not feeling it?
Well, you got a couple questions in there. Let's see. The first one to go back. You were talking about the download thing. You know, and putting the idea of putting the 8 songs on the website, which are still there, by the way, listeners. If you go to our website, gripweeds.com, you get 8 songs for free of our new album, Strange Change Machine. And the idea there is, how can we go wrong if, you know, people get these songs for free? If they like them, they're going to either A, buy the record, which I would recommend, because there's a lot more great songs on it. But also,
great.
You know, if they share with other people, then we get the possibility of you know, them turning other of, you know, their friends on to our music, and they can go to the website and get, you know, the album or whatever, you know. And the idea is just to get the music out there and expose people to it. And, you know, and so what, we have to, you know, give away 8 songs. It doesn't really bother me. It's about exposure, and if people are true fans, they're going to want to hear the rest of the album. That's the way I am. If I'm knocked out by something, I'm going to go get the record, you know, and because I got to hear
right.
the whole thing. So that's that one. And then the other thing is about live. You know, the thing about that, there's an element to a song. The song really, a song has various elements to it. One of them is when a songwriter, like say it's me, sit down to write a song, and I have this experience writing it, and I come up with this, you know, the chords and the melody and just this whole vibe that becomes the song. Then part two is when I give it to the band, and the band interprets that. Then it becomes a performance, you know, and playing it live helps find the way the band plays the song best. And so it's sometimes it's good, sometimes you don't need to, but sometimes with songs you have to find the arrangement as a band. And you can do that, one way to do that is to go and play it live because you're under pressure to get it right. And maybe you really like it. Like maybe I brought a song into the band and the band just really took to it right away. We're like, oh, let's play this live because we're so excited, you know?
Yeah.
And that happens too. And so, but that also helps in the recording. If you've got a few shows under your belt with a song, you know, you go into the studio from a much more confident standpoint of like, you know, I've tried a few things. We played it as a band, arranged it, you know, got some feedback from the audience. And, you know, it's a little bit tighter because the band knows it. So now we just go in and we play it, and it's not a big deal, you know. So that's how the live thing can help the recording of a song. But also what happens is it also works in other ways. Like you could take a song like Close to the Sun off the new album. That started out as a demo meaning just a scratch recording that I
right.
did. I wrote the song and I just wanted to make a recording of it as quickly as I could to get it down. So I just, you know, I did it real fast. I put it all down and I got into what sometimes happens when you're recording is you get into a real mood. I've had this happen to me a couple times more than a couple times, but you kind of get lost in the recording and time, everything falls away, and it's just a lot of fun. One time I was just up all night making a demo, you know, and woke up, you know, I didn't wake up, I never went to bed. It was like the sun's coming up, and I got this great song, you know. But Close to the Sun was one of my demos, and then I took it to the band, and we never actually played it as a band. We just assembled the song
right.
in the studio because I had this great demo that was full of, you know, the inspiration and the excitement of having written the song. So we just took that demo and added to it and changed it, you know, to make it a band performance. Kristen played a lot of great guitar. Rick played some keyboards, actually. MK did a great bass part. And I play the I play the trash can on that song. I play the garbage can. I do.
Awesome.
If you listen to it, there's this like ting 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 ting. It's a garbage can. So, you know, that song was a studio animal, and then we took it and played it live after the fact, after it was all written, recorded, everything, and then we started playing it live, and it took off there too, you know, and it became something else because it's going to change when the band starts playing it live as opposed to, you know, a more controlled situation in the studio. Every song is kind of different, and I would say every difference, any different way you could write, record, and perform a song was part of the Strange Change Machine project. You could go through each one, and you know, each one has its own story.
Heard you're a multi-instrumentalist. Well, aside from the trash can,
that's my best instrument.
Well, I heard you got straight A's in band on the trash can in school when you were growing up. But
how could I not?
What else do you play? I mean, I'm going to take a wild stab. You already mentioned guitar. So drums, guitar, trash can, but what else do you play?
Well, I started out as a piano player early on. It was like when I was about 8 years old, I was taking piano lessons. But I think I forgot everything I learned except for one song. But what stuck with me was being able to play chords and, you know, fingerings and things. I can't read music to save my life, but I can remember the piano fingerings, and that's come in real handy in the studio because every now and then when you need a keyboard part, either Rick or I could play it, you know, in the studio.
Right.
And hence we don't really need any other session musicians, you know. We can kind of cover everything between all of us in the band. So I kind of started out as a keyboard player, but I quickly moved to guitar. Yeah. And then at the same time as I was playing guitar, I was only 9 years old, so my brother was playing drums, and the drums were such a fun thing to me. It was so, you know, like, wow. It's kind of like my energy, you know, is to be crazy, I guess, and maybe a little more high strung. And so drums were a perfect fit for me growing up. So like I, you know, it's a place to take out your aggressions, and it was just great, you know. So I would just play to records and, you know, anything. And before I knew it, and literally I just woke up one day and I was a drummer, and I didn't really even know how it happened. I could play. And that was, you know, kind of the easiest thing I've ever done, drums. So then I started to get, you know, I was playing in bands and stuff, and I started to get a little more serious about drumming, but I was always playing guitar a little bit on the side. And then when the Gripweed started, there was kind of this need to, you know, we needed songs, and started to sort of get into songwriting. And drums is a hard instrument to write songs on. You need a guitar, you need a tune. So
yeah.
I just gravitated towards the guitar for that. But, you know, also I have to, in the studio, I'll play bass, you know, if it's needed. I played bass all, I did all the bass work on Pat's album, Pat DiNizio's album, the Buddy Holly album. I did all the bass work on that.
Oh, wow.
And lead guitar work, which I'd never done. But he believed in me. So I did it. You know, but outside of that, you know, bass, I would say in this order, drums, guitar, keyboard, and then bass way at the bottom, because I couldn't play it live to save my life. But then singing is probably number one or two up there for me. And that was another accident that I sort of picked up along the way.
I'll tell you what, there's a lot of musicians out there that have, and I guess I think one of the most difficult things to do is to play drums and sing lead. How do you do it?
I couldn't tell you. It's not something I can explain. It's just something that if you try to, it's one of those things where if you try to break it down, you lose it. You know, it becomes, it just disappears. So if I start to like break it down and think I've got to play on this beat and that beat, and I'll mess up immediately. You know, but so I just have to get into the musical zone, which is like a non-thinking area of the mind,
right.
You know, of no thought, just channeling music. And if you do that, then that's where all the good stuff comes.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen you, I've seen some of the videos on YouTube with you playing and singing. And, you know, I've seen, you know, other drummers playing and singing, like, I mean, Phil Collins comes to mind, but I mean, ultimately, I just have being a hack guitar player. I understand how it can be difficult when you're playing guitar, even just chords, and you're trying to sing along. But when you're trying to play, keep the beat of the song and sing lead, like you just said, I just that takes an immense amount of talent and going into a zone that I don't go to, or I don't know if I've ever been there.
I think it's various parts of the brain working together because you're doing two jobs. You know, usually they have the drummer in the back of the band keeping the beat solidly and reliably, holding it down. And then you've got your singer out front solidly handling the lead vocal, you know. And so I come along and I'm in the back of the band trying to hold down the band and lead it at the same time. It's kind of insane if you think about it. And, you know, I don't know how it came to be, and sometimes I wish it didn't because it's really kind of hard to do at times. It's not hard to do. It's just hard to it's hard to lead the band from the back of the stage sometimes in the dark with no vocal monitor. And, you know, drummer's kind of the, you know, you heard the drummer jokes. It's like the back of the bus, you know. It's kind of the butt of the joke, the drummer in the band.
Hey, Kurt, could you take a minute and introduce everyone in the band? Save your brother for last, if you could.
Sure. Well, we'll say ladies first, and that would be Kristen Pinnell on lead guitar and also vocals. And we're married. We met through music. And she's great. She's a great guitarist. And she also plays flute. And then you have Michael Kelly, who is a tremendous bass player. He's so good that he now has his own bass guitar model that's coming out on Waterstone Instruments. He's got the MK bass coming out to his specifications. It's going to be coming out in a few months, I think. And he also picked up the 12-string bass from Waterstone because he's a big fan of Tom Peterson from Cheap Trick.
Mm-hmm.
And he not that he aspires to be Tom Peterson, but I think he wants to make more of a... He wants more real estate in the Gripweed, so he picked up the 12-string bass. More sonic real estate, I should say.
Gotcha,
the group needs. And so he picked up the 12-string bass. And he's a very he's probably the most schooled member of the band in terms of music. He has a music degree, and so he can, you know, he can sort of put to paper what maybe Rick and I can only dream about. And then you have Rick Ryle, my brother, on guitar and vocals, and he is probably somewhere around one half of the songs are written by him. Kristen chips in with songs, and I write songs, and sometimes we write them together, and you know, but Rick is, I would say Rick is singer, songwriter, and guitar player, and also a multi-instrumentalist. He can play drums too.
What's it like being in a band with your wife and your brother? I mean, obviously, I'm not looking for dirt. How is the dynamic? I mean, has MK? I mean, is he changing his last name or just adding a hyphen to become a Ryle?
He's probably, you know, tempted to do that, but you know, it's a great thing. And then it can sometimes be very difficult. I would say that MK adds sort of a very important outside element that can sometimes change the chemistry in just such a way that he can influence the vibe, you know, because he just might be the one to keep us from being at each other's throats, especially me and Rick. well, you know, it's weird. I would say that I'm at the center of a triangle in a way, if there is a center of a triangle. But I'm in the center of it. I know that.
Right.
You know, between my brother and Kristen, and I seem to be the middleman. You know, the point guy. Which
right.
is okay by me. I can handle it, you know, I have a special relationship with all of them, you know, and
yeah.
Everybody has their own relationships around me too. So it's just a chemistry, and you know, with Rick, it's like being that he's my brother. We have this totally unspoken thing about music because we grew up together and we sing together, and there's just this unspoken bond that we have that the other two just can't even, you know, they'll never be there because they weren't with us when we were 10.
Yeah.
You know, as much as close as we all are. And then yet Kristen and I have a special thing, you know, which I would say in a way is separate from our personal relationship. We have a professional relationship with the band, and we have a personal relationship, and you know, there is overlap there, obviously, you know, she's a great, great guitar player, and it's so great for me to have a musician like her there to, you know, just ready to work on a new song and put her talents to it, and we've developed, you know, kind of a good working relationship over the years now where I guess I'm writing for her because I know what she's going to put on songs now. And that's kind of what I want to hear. So it's just interesting, you know.
What is playing live? A lot of different things can happen. I mean, we heard earlier that about 5 minutes before the Smithereens hit the stage at Court Tavern, you got a piece of machinery to start working. But playing live, any crazy stories of just things, something crazy happening that was really cool, or you were like, holy cow, what the hell's going on here?
Well, I can give you both sides of that, the bad side and the good side. For the bad side is when you're playing live, you have to roll with things, and the key, if there's any musicians out there, the key is not to let the audience know that anything's gone wrong, because the audience may not pick it up, and
right.
any number of things can go wrong. One gig, and I had to learn the hard way. One gig, I put my foot through the bass drum head, right in the middle of the set, and I was too inexperienced to fake playing the kick drum and just get through the set. No,
right.
I made a big stink out of it. Does anybody in the audience have a bass drum head? You know, like they would.
Yeah.
And
right.
I'll stop the show. I can't play. And that's that type of stuff is where, you know, the experience of having played in clubs and stuff, when you know stuff's going to go wrong, the best thing to do is just to keep it from the audience because they may not even know, you know, and you just, your job is to keep the show going, you know?
Right.
So that's like on the bad side of things. On the good side, we played a gig in North Carolina down in John Dawson's area with my Southern accent. We were doing the show down there, and it wasn't that well attended. It was okay. You know where it was? It was at the Garage in Winston-Salem. And we're playing the show. I think Mitch Easter was in the audience. And we're doing this show, and I didn't get the feeling that people were really paying that much attention. It just didn't seem to me that way. So I just sort of thought, all right, I'm just going to kind of, you know, we're just going to play as a band and not worry about the rest of the audience. We're just going to do our thing. And
right.
I put my head down for a little while. We're playing this, I don't know what we were playing, but I guess I wasn't singing because I had my head down. And I looked up, and lo and behold, all the people that were had been in the back of the club had now come up to the front of the stage. I don't know what we were doing, but whatever it was, they caught it, you know? And
right.
So that's that for me was a lesson in, you know, don't get discouraged. If you're not going over the way you want to go over, then just play for yourself. And, you know, if it's good, the people will hear it and they'll know.
Well, if you were a tree, what tree would you be?
A tree?
That was a Barbara Walters question back in the 70s, I believe.
Good Lord.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
you don't have to answer, you don't have to answer that. My answer was a Christmas tree.
Well, no, I wouldn't want to be a Christmas tree. You get cut down. I'd want to be,
yeah.
You know, like, I'd want to be one of those long-living, you know, oak trees or something that's, you know, that really old wood, you know, trees are they call trees, you know, they think some people believe that trees have souls, and there's like an advanced, believe it or not, a more advanced level of being than a human being, and that trees all are living souls, and they're just kind of there and hanging out in the world, and they, you know, they can get to be very old if they're not cut down. So I wouldn't mind being a tree in a nice forest somewhere.
So it sounds to me like you would be like a band that's been around for 20 years. I'd be the one-hit wonder.
That sounds like that. You'd be cut down.
Yeah.
Christmas tree. Hey, you look, what happens to the Christmas tree in January? You get thrown out.
Yeah. Well,
wilted.
That's a real tree. I got a fake tree I'm looking at right now. I'll put it in a box and put it in the closet and pull it out next December.
There you go.
With Strange Change Machine, if I were just to ask you, if you were just to just rattle off three songs on the top of your head that are on the record, for no reason other than they're just there, what would they be?
Well, I'm not sure I know what you mean, but you mean just the first three that come to my mind?
Exactly.
Strange Change Machine, the first the title song. And should I explain why?
Absolutely.
Or,
absolutely.
Oh. Okay. Well,
if you don't, I mean, it's not a big deal, but I was like, I'm really just kind of looking like, you know, like, are there, like, looking for three songs that just kind of rattle inside your head, like they're right there at the, in the front. And if someone asks you, you know, hey, Kurt, three songs on Strange Change Machine, if you wanted me to tune in and listen to this record right now, what would you want me to key in on?
Oh, okay. All right. I would say Speed of Life, Don't You Believe It, and Strange Change Machine. Yeah, probably. I mean, that's still a one-sided view of what the album is.
Right.
It's hard with three songs because, you know, Strange Change Machine is part of that sort of suite of songs that you know, we tried to go all over the musical map with that. So maybe I would say, you know, the whole side two or the whole second half of the CD is kind of it's side two on the vinyl.
Gotcha. Yeah,
starting with Sun Channel. Yeah, and all the songs kind of flow together.
With regard to Strange Change Machine, we have a double record here. At least I'll just talk about it from the CD perspective. But two discs, pictures, and we don't have the lyrics in here. But I guess there's a lot of things going on. I guess do you guys do your own artwork or graphic artwork? I mean,
yeah.
You talk about DIY, but I mean, are you?
Well, yeah, DIY means do it yourself. We do
right. Everything
ourselves. except take, you know, the group pictures. We can't really do that. If we could, we would. But we don't.
Wow.
So, I actually do graphic work. I did the design work on all our albums except for Infinite Soul. I've done the graphics for, so yeah, I designed the cover for Strange Change Machine, and it wasn't easy. it went through a whole lot to get to where it was, and it actually wound up I have to say it wound up being a real group design in a way. I mean, the design was kind of mine, but it was, there was a lot of influence from the band. For instance, MK was the one who had the idea to just put the logo on the cover. And then I sort of chipped in with the, you know, the kind of circuit, psychedelic circuits going through the logo, and that's how I saw it. You know, so everybody kind of had their ideas, you know, in there. But it was one of these things where it started in one place, and then it ended up in a completely other place from a visual standpoint of what it was originally thought to be. But you know what? It's whatever works. And when things don't work, what do? You change them to make them work. You know, you're looking, always looking for that spark or that, you know, some barometer of, yeah, I got it right. And if you don't have it right, you find that out pretty quickly when the band starts going, don't like it, not good, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
So yeah, I went through a lot of that.
How are you guys, or how does the band define success? Like how, I guess, I don't want to say not getting into too many details, but like, you know, you made the record and you put it out there. What do you consider to be a successful record for the Gripweeds or from your own personal opinion perspective?
Well, there's various levels of that. I mean, there's always more that you'd want, you know, in a perfect world. It's of course it's never enough, but you know, I think one of them is recognition. If you put out a record that you know, you get people that really, really like it, and we've definitely got that. People have responded really, really positively to the album. So from that standpoint, it's definitely been a success. And you just never know, because when, you know, we're creating stuff and we're hoping it's good and you know, but you're still in a bit of a bubble because you don't know what people are going to think outside, and maybe what you think is off the mark. You know, you just don't know until you put it out there and get that feedback from people. And then, you know, and eventually sometimes you don't even know how well you did until years later when you finally get an outside perspective on your own work. But I think that we did pretty well with this one. Of course, we would want it to be even more successful in terms of chart success or more sales, or, you know, to put us on the map in many other ways. But it has been very successful, got supported by radio, and, you know, so how do I define success? I would say that the project that we did justified itself. That there was a reason for doing it, you know, and all those hours and all that time was towards some goal, you know. I mean, just finishing an album in and of itself is a goal and a success too, and that there's a lot of satisfaction when you finish a record. You know, it's a really good feeling when you're like, it's done, and now we're going to put it out, you know, and that is just a level of accomplishment when you do that. So that's one success, and then you get the success from, you know, people and the feedback from the album that people give you and stuff like that, and, you know, hopefully that just keeps on happening. Are you still there?
Bands, yeah, still, no, I'm still here. Bands and musicians. Well, Kurt, I mean, I'm really excited because I'm a big fan, and like, this is exciting for me. It's exciting for me. It kind of sounds like your excitement in terms of working with the Smithereens and Pat D'Anizio. It's just really exciting to me to have you on the phone to talk about the record.
Well, and to talk to you about I'm honored.
This. So, up for Klempt.
What?
Okay, I'm not for. I'm not really for Klempt, but I mean it's really exciting for me. but some musicians and bands that you listen to now, has anything kind of come your way where you're like, oh yeah, I really dig this. Like, for example, for me, there's a band Ken Stringfellow produced recently. He just posted it on, I don't want to say on a whim, but he just posted something on Facebook that said, hey, you know, one of the best albums I had worked on in 2010 was this band Olivia, and they're in Spain, and I heard their songs and I was like, wow, the first song Open Graves just totally captured me, and off I went and I bought the album. So like things like that. So I guess my question to you is there anything that kind of is catching your ear or has caught your ear recently maybe in a scenario like that?
Well, that happens all the time. But specifically, I mean, a couple of years ago, I got turned on to the Fleet Foxes from somebody. I think it was my brother. It was Rick. It didn't seem to hit him the way it hit me. I heard their album, Fleet Foxes, and I was just, like, blown away, really, on a whole bunch of different levels, and challenged by their music I was just inspired to write some of my own music directly from listening to their album, because it was so strong for me. And a band like Dunyan, which is a band out of Sweden, had a similar effect on me. But there, it was different with them because I listened to some of their stuff. They're this, I don't know if you know them. They're a Swedish band. They sing in Swedish, and they're very kind of psychedelic pop. But they, what they do is they're more kind of a little more trippy and long form kind of songs. It's not as tight, and it like I've gotten a lot of inspiration from them for, like, for instance, Speed of Life. I was inspired to sort of write a song on drums because I'd heard Dunyan. A lot of bands at House of Vibes, I'm getting new music all the time.
Right.
The Anderson Council is one band that we've worked with here for about 10 years, and we're working on their third album right now, and I'm always inspired by Pete Horvath's writing. He's just a great writer, and, you know, so to be working as kind of an extra member, you know, another member of the band on their stuff is really great, you know. And then I'm also working with Doughboys, and they've got some really great new songs that, you know, influenced me. And it's just good to be, you know, working on this kind of stuff and to, you know, to have the opportunity to do it. So, and I'm still listening to all kinds of stuff too. The weird thing is I recently got into Electric Light Orchestra, like earlier Electric Light Orchestra. I'd never ever listened to them growing up at all, and I'm a big fan of The Move, the band that came before them, and also another band, The Idle Race, which was Jeff Lynne's first band, and so it was always like, you know, ELO was kind of out there, and I never really wanted to listen, and I just started to, you know, I heard their first album, and then I heard their second album. I got into this ELO kick recently, and so that's what I've been listening to. I don't know how it's going to inspire me, but it will.
The videos that the Gripweeds have shot, have the members of the band been the guiding force behind those videos, or have you used a video production company to come in and they listened to the songs that you were looking to put on video? How has that worked in the past, and with the songs that you made video available for Strange Change Machine?
Oh, for Strange Change Machine, I was going to say, for, you know, they're all different. The first real video we did was Astral Man. That was with Ken Ross, who had done a lot of really cool work in the 80s, primarily. With all kinds of people like REM, I think, and the Smithereens. So we got a chance to work with him, and so that was a real group effort of kind of his ideas and our ideas, and we put them all together. And on this album, we shot a video for Speed of Life with one director, and he kind of bailed out on the project because of personal reasons, and we had to get in someone to edit it, this guy James Hannon, who, it was really good. He was really excited about it and brought a lot of ideas in. But the vision for that was basically it was kind of mine with, you know, with help from the Gripweeds, basically. And then we did the video for Don't You Believe It, and that was kind of, I think that was more Rick's idea. That was Michael Kelly's idea, that one, shooting in the white room and the scooters and stuff.
That was
MK's. MK had gotten a hold of this video, this Italian scooter commercial, and for Lambretta, and it was from 1962. And he got it off YouTube, I think, and we watched it. And what he did was he put "Don't You Believe It" to the video, and he just put it to the commercial. And we were like, "Wow, that's really cool. Let's use it." And so we decided to put our own footage in there around it.
Sweet.
So that's our first comedy. That's our first comedy. It's a little amateurish, but it's good. I mean, what do you want for free?
Exactly. And here's another question. Television, movies, have the Gripweeds had anything played on TV shows or movies? And, you know, and could we possibly be hearing any Strange Change Machine tunes in those venues?
Oh, I sure hope so. I mean, we're trying. We don't have a problem with you know, TV or film using our stuff. We've had a couple of things. We had a song in Criminal Minds, the TV mm-hmm. show. We had one song used in connection with that, and then we had there's another movie called Blood River that used a Gripweed song from the first album. And there have been various things along the way. Some things haven't worked because sometimes you get a request and it doesn't pan out, you know, something like that. And, you know, you just, movies it's really hard. It's an even harder field, I think, than music because there's so much more money involved.
Right.
And, you know, so you're constantly waiting to find out if something's going to go through, you know, but, We have a lot of irons in the fire right now with people kind of hawking our songs to various movies and TV shows and stuff, and we're just hoping something sticks, you know. It's really good that we create a song and, you know, it kind of works for us. It goes out there and works for the band. So we don't have to, so we can write another one and spend our time on other material, and that song goes out and, you know, maybe it'll get attached to a movie or something. That would be great, you know?
That's great. And I apologize, Kurt, we're going to have to wind down, but a couple things I want to do. Number one, gripweeds.com is the website, and for all things Gripweeds, you can also purchase the Strange Change Machine record there. What are the different? I think there's a album. There's a couple different things you can get. So if you can run that, if you don't mind running through that for me, I would appreciate that.
No problem. Well, you can get the CD, the double CD, and you can get the vinyl double album, with a gatefold sleeve and all that. And then you could the vinyl also has MP3 download card in it. So you're not missing out on any, you know, iPod possibilities with that. best of both worlds, really. So and then you could get the downloads. You could just directly from our site, and that goes for our back catalog too. Everything's available on download from our site directly, and also our previious four albums, the CDs are there too.
Awesome.
All at gripweeds.com.
And also House of Vibes, if you want to learn more about the recording studio is houseofvibes.com, and if you're a musician, you're looking for a place to record, you know, what would House of Vibes, or what does House of Vibes bring to the table that you enjoy and that the band enjoys for recording and also the feedback that you've heard from other bands that record there?
Oh, well, you know, the House of Vibes studio has been more than we ever thought it would be. It's the gift that keeps giving for me. It started out as a demo studio for us. It started out very humbly. It was just, you know, a couple of tape machines that we used as a writing tool for our songs, and then it became the place where we recorded our albums and kind of our whole headquarters. What we didn't realize when we were, you know, doing this, basically what we were doing over the history of the band, especially early on, is learning our craft and learning our songwriting craft, but also learning our recording craft. So there is a learning curve with that. You don't go from, you know, from one level to the next without some pain and time to get there. And so, you know, we eventually got there, at least I think we did. You know, what we sacrificed in terms of instant hits or whatever, we've gained in having such a resource at our disposal that, you know, as the music business crumbles around us and, you know, all the big studios are going down the tubes, we're still here and we've got, you know, House of Vibes to at our disposal to work out all our ideas and do whatever we need to do. So this has been a great, great thing. And, you know, being that we're in the music business and we're musicians, we're not just outside people, we sort of bring that to the table for any band that records here, you know, just kind of knowing what it's like to be on that side of the glass, you know, is what we know. So we're an ally rather than, you know, anything else. And so I think, you know, all the bands that have worked here, they all come back, you know, to record again. And that, I think that says something right there, you know, about our performance. And, you know, we've been incredibly lucky here to have bands that are like-minded and, you know, some sort of similar musical, you know, influences are all working here, and it's become this sort of lab, you know, and just a, you know, sort of central place for a sound in a way, which who would have expected that?
It's amazing how things evolve. And,
yeah.
And I've actually, I remember, I don't know, a few years ago, I was actually on the House of Vibes website, and I got to read about, you know, the various things, you know, that you all do. And I think one of the things was you bought Jan Hammer's, you know, tape recorder, or I'm not sure.
His console. I have my feet on it right now. I'm in the House of Vibes. I'm looking at the console. I just had my feet on it before. It's a great, great console. Now, talking about the Smithereens, you know, working with them and working with, you know, people like Gary Lucas from Captain Beefheart, who just passed away.
Right.
Captain Beefheart, not Gary Lucas.
Right.
You know, we got this console right at the time that we were recording the live album for the Smithereens. And this was just another piece of the puzzle, getting this console off Jan Hammer. Because, again, it took us up to another level of studio ability that we didn't have before. When you're working with gear that isn't quite, you know, as good quality as it needs to be, you don't grow as much. When you're working with equipment that's of a level of quality, you work up to it. And so that also comes into play. You know, there's this technological evolution in the studio and in our abilities that has been kept sort of apace with each album that we do. So we're constantly growing in artistic ways and also technical ways, you know, with our ability to kind of manipulate the studio to what we want to hear. And that sort of everything, you know, folds in and it all works together. I work with the Doughboys, or I work with the Smithereens, or Third of Never, get ideas you know, working with another band and another way of looking at things, or, you know, I'm able to try some things with them. I bring that back to the Gripweeds. I try some, you know, we're working on something in the Gripweeds. We get a new idea. I suggest it to some other band that comes in, and, you know, it all works together, and I feel like I'm at the center of it again. You know, it's good to be there.
You're the center of the triangle.
I'm the center of the triangle, whatever that is.
I guess one last thing for young musicians or bands. Do you have a couple of, like, words of wisdom as, like, the big brother?
Big brother, not
the government.
Big brother is watching you.
Yeah.
No, I would say, it's tough being a young band now, because the future that was there when we were starting out was, you're going to get signed, you can be famous. It's not there anymore. You know, it's like this whole carrot that they used to dangle in front of our faces. You know, you can make a lot of money, get a studio contract and, you know, record contract, and get a big advance and go into the studio and hundreds of thousands of dollars, and, you know, the label's going to lavish all this attention on you. Well, that's all gone. You know, it's really weird. The whole industry got sucked out. So I would say, you know, maybe that's a good thing, because it keeps you focused on what's really, really important, which is the music. Stupid. Right? You know, that's what you're there for. You're not there for the, you know, it's like rock and roll. You're not there for the sex, drugs, and chicks. You're there to make music. All that other stuff is outside, and, hey, it's good if it comes your way, but focus on what you're supposed to focus on, and that is its own reward, you know? Making that great record is by far and away a great, you know, it's its own reward. So if you can do that, you know, budding musicians out there, then that becomes your future.
Well, all right, folks. Kurt Ryle from the Gripweeds has given us a solid, at least an hour. I mean, if not more. But Kurt, you've hit on so many great things, and I just feel like I would like to keep talking to you for at least another 3 hours. But obviously that can't happen. It doesn't work properly within radio. But I can't thank you enough for taking the time out from your schedule, and I know it's busy and hectic, but thank you very much. I'll gush on the actual broadcast day of this of the show, but seriously, I really cannot thank you enough for just taking the time to be on the show and sharing about you and the Gripweeds and this great record, Strange Change Machine.
Oh, thank you. You know, you're welcome, because you help us get it out there. And so we'll do anything we can for people to hear about us and hear about the album. So we appreciate it.